All right, it's February 11th, 2007. My name is Lee Asher. I'm sitting here with my buddy Alan Nu from the East Coast. He's on the West Coast right now on Excellent Series. He worked in Vancouver and Calgary and Winnipeg and Seattle. He worked Eugene today, and he's off to do a gig tomorrow, and then he's got Portland on Thursday. So, hey, Alan, thanks for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Lee. It's been fun.
You sound kind of tired, man. It sounds Excellent Series is a pretty cool, grueling tour, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it sure is. Yes, indeed. It's been nonstop. Every single day, a different town.
I appreciate you, you know, at least having the next 15 minutes to talk to me and talk to the people that are listening. Real fast, I just want to tell everyone, you know, you sound pretty tired. Let's tell them why you're so tired. You flew into Seattle. You drove across the border to Vancouver. You got on a plane, and this is all on the same day. You got on a plane, flew to Calgary so that you could do the lecture that night in Calgary, and then you caught a plane the next day to go to Winnipeg, did a lecture that night in Winnipeg, and then flew back to Vancouver, did a lecture in Vancouver, got back in your car, crossed the border back to Seattle, did a lecture that afternoon in Seattle, and then drove all the way from Seattle to Eugene, which is about a 5.5-hour drive, to lecture today in Eugene, no days off. Now, you're working a gig tomorrow, right? Tomorrow's supposed to be your day off on the Excellent Series, but you've opted to go and perform a professional show. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, it was completely random. During the week that I was doing the Excellent Series, a college just happened to see that I was going to be in the Pacific Northwest and called my college agent and asked to book it. So I'll be in a place called Ontario, Oregon. That would be tomorrow at 7 p.m., and I have to leave here at 8 o'clock in the morning first thing and head over there, do a 7 p.m. show. It's an hour-long ESP mentalism show for the students, and then from there I fly back and complete the Excellent Series in Portland.
I know a lot of listeners know you for being a mentalist, but a lot of people don't realize that you've actually spent a lot of time in the trenches, like in restaurants, working, doing a lot of close-up, a lot of, you know, professional mingling, if you will. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, your experiences being a restaurant worker?
Sure, I sure can. Well, first to mention about the fact that I do mentalism, you know, it is with just a small amount of props, usually just a board and a marker and then maybe a deck of cards and a small table and some spoons. The restaurant business was, I used to perform close-up magic at restaurants all over D.C., and it was something that I actually became quite successful at in the D.C. area, running up to 5 different restaurants at a time. Definitely 3 of them are still have performers over in the D.C. area right now. It's been something I have done for many, many years.
You know, talking about restaurants, working in restaurants is a pretty hot topic. Guys like David Stone, you mentioned Kirk Charles earlier in your lecture today. There's just been a lot of guys that have discussed the art of working a restaurant, the art of table hopping. And I heard you say something to a couple of guys tonight, and this was not in the lecture, that I would love if you would tell the listeners right now about, because everyone who ever performs always gets asked this question: can you make my wife disappear or my significant other disappear? And your answer was just phenomenal. So would you mind sharing that with my listeners?
Certainly. Basically, I always found that to be an interesting question because it always put people in a strange place. Basically, you're asking them if they'd like to see magic, and then usually one person or the other will say something before they get a chance to think. And usually, because it's you're mentioning that you're a magician, they're caught off guard, and that thing comes out of their mouth where they say, "Can you make her disappear? Can you make him disappear?" It ends up becoming a weird thing to say because it ends up offending one person at the table usually, and then it simultaneously causes the first person to realize that they kind of stuck their foot in their mouth before actually thinking about what they said or not. regardless, it sends a kind of a strange pall over the table, and it makes it really difficult for performers like of the restaurant variety to continue their acts, mainly because there are two people in conflict at that point. So my feeling is that there are different ways of being able to approach that subject, and one is to retort back to the person who said it and say something like, well, if you continue speaking like that, eventually she will. And that would be one way of putting it, but I guess my feeling is that, unfortunately, that ends up making the first guy ending up, it makes the first guy the idiot in the matter, and that's not necessarily good either, since as a performer, your job is to spread magic and love for people, so everyone's there to have a good time, and you're there to just kind of make sure that there are no conflicts. So my answer to all of that was actually quite simple, and something that came to me over many years of just doing it, and that's to simply just pause and look at the person and go, frankly, I need all the audience I can get. And by saying it that way, if you just say it, it's not a belly buster, it's not something that gets a huge laugh, but it does get a laugh, and it's and it causes the audience to realize that the comments and all of that stuff aren't nearly as important as what needs to be happening right now, and that is the performer needs to start performing, and let's get down to business. So that's basically the line. You just say, I need all the audience I can get, and in fact, you're telling them the truth, and if you tell it to them in the most sincere way, you're really telling them something that is necessary, because indeed you need all the audience you can get as a performer.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, we never think about things like that, and it's the details that really make the person. And I think that's a really classy way to approach something like that. And so I thank you for sharing that with my people. One more thing before we go. It's rare that I get this opportunity, but dude, you're a television star. You had 4 of your own television specials. Can you just tell us, give us some insight as to, you know, what it was like to make your own series?
Well, it was maybe just a little more grueling than the Excellent series. We had to basically put together 4 television specials in a period of 3 months from the time that the contract was signed. And on my end, it was a little difficult, only because I wasn't nearly as prepared. I was kind of in disbelief, personal disbelief, that I would actually have a television series of my own until the contract actually was signed. And I guess my original thinking was that I would have some time to actually put it together, but I didn't. So it was a whole lot of work. We basically, you know, I'm a person who considers himself an industry professional, and therefore when I was put to task and realized that I wasn't as quite ready as I needed to be, I rounded up a bunch of really close friends of mine, and we brainstormed and we jammed, and it became like essentially a real long jam session of some really outrageous effects. So all I can say is there were good times, and there are bad times, and there are ugly times, and there are absolutely majestic times when things that couldn't possibly happen all of a sudden would happen for us, and you know, weather would seem like it wasn't going to be on our side, and we would get out there and all of a sudden the weather was perfect, and you know, it was pretty magical. All in all, just doing the entire experience, it was something that I can definitely never forget.
I bet, you know, having your own television show, that's something that you can show your children and your children's children. But on a side note, again, because I, you know, one last question, because I could talk to you for all day if I, you know, if you'd let me. You wrote a book. You just finished a book, basically to start off on the Excellent series, and you said it was almost like a rite of passage. It allowed you to do things that you couldn't do 4 or 5 years ago. It allowed you to share secrets with the community, and that you weren't necessarily comfortable is what you were talking about a couple of years ago with that, and now you're more comfortable, and this book has allowed you to do that. It's been the rite of passage, and you talk about rites of passages in the book, because I kind of glanced it over a little earlier this afternoon. But could you tell us a little more about this book and this rite of passage?
Well, as far as having rites of passage, I think what you're really talking about is my feeling behind magicians and their secrets, and how the secrets should be passed along, and how the secrets should be respected and thought about as actual, you know, personal powers that can help them and potentially even help the people around them if it's played out properly. My feeling is that pre-internet secrets were very much secrets, and post-internet secrets have become slightly diluted, basically just due to the fact that it's very easy to look up something at the touch of a button by going up to your monitor after seeing something that might interest you. So, therefore, if you see a card trick that blows your mind and you really want to know something, you can Google it, and chances are you'll get something that pops up that'll be very similar to what you just saw. What I think that does is it diminishes the power of the secrets, and therefore, I sort of feel that although the internet and other forms of media, DVD and so on, are excellent ways of being able to teach magic in its many forms, I feel that those particular effects and stuff that are coveted, that are actually, you know, the true secrets behind the work of what we do, can actually be sort of locked down a little bit better by being placed inside of literature, like actual hardcover books that or at least cover books that that people can hold in their hands and maybe cannot find the actual literature on the internet. Just because my feeling is that our art is something that is based on the sharing of secrets, and that if we think about how we pass down the secrets and stuff, we can consider various different ways of doing that. And I sort of felt that books were one way of being able to lock them down, since you would have to first find the book, then you'd have to actually read the book, and then you would have to learn and practice the knowledge that you acquire from the book for your own personal execution. And then from there, you would have to figure out how you would be able to apply that knowledge into your own personal way of doing things, and that in and of itself is a personal rite of passage that, although it's not the same thing as, like, say the initiation into a secret society, it definitely is an initiation into the secret society within your mental data of information.
Well, yeah, we are. You know, magic is a very secretive society. You know, yeah, you can join the IBM or the SAIM, send your money into the, you know, wherever the dues are due. That doesn't really make you a magician. It's the going to lectures. It's going to the meetings. It's hanging out with that group of guys that you want to learn magic from and learn hanging out with. That's where the real secret society is. And so just to be able to, you know, go to Google and type in information, I don't think necessarily makes you a magician. Yeah, it gives you access to magic information, but it's how you, you know, interpret the information, I think, is the important part. But yeah, you know, with the internet, there's a lot more secrets out there, I think. A lot more secrets. It's just deciphering which ones you want to learn, you know, because there's only so much time in the day, and there's only so much you want and can learn, and there's just too much out there. If you could spend a year just on card magic alone, on just secrets that you can find in Google. But how many years does it take you to decipher which one is actually the good one? You know, it takes you forever. So I like what you're saying about putting, you know, just limiting the exclusivity of information. You can only get it in this form. And I like that you've taken some of your material and only put it in book form, and you can only find it if you search for it. You know, you take the journey. You know, back in the day, you used to have to get into the car and drive to the magic shop and hopefully they would let you in. Now, you have to go and find the right piece of information in the right book. So I applaud your effort, my friend. All right, Alon, I think we're coming to the end here. You're looking pretty tired, and my people probably have to go do some things. They probably have to go and practice magic is actually what I want them to go and do. So can you leave them with something influential, something provocative, something iconic?
Whether you're a magician or a mentalist or a sideshow artist or a hypnotist or anybody within this large mystery-making paradigm, consider that everything that you do is an actual power. Not necessarily, you know, a real power or a fake power, but a power that that enables you to do the things that you do. It enables you to get done the things that you get done. And that power enables you to do just about anything from influence people in many different ways to possibly earn your keep within a job or just about anything. When you put someone in a state of mind that only this mystery making that we do can, you're putting people in a state of mind that kind of breaks down their sense of reality. And though sometimes they might be just simply suspending their disbelief, when they get put in that state of mind, I think that potentially there's a good place to inject some seed of wisdom, something that will empower them, that will make them a better person. And perhaps if we see our magic as something that enables us to do that, maybe we can evolve more and legitimize our art even more than it ever has.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you coming on Lecture Tour. I appreciate you taking the time to speak to my peoples. I thank you guys for listening. I hope you're inspired.